I'm David.
And I'm Courtney.
And welcome to Room to Roam, a podcast about parenthood and relationships.
And all the shit in between.
All right, and we are back with another professional episode. We have Rachel Stark, a local Portland therapist, that is here to chat with us about the amazing work that she does around postpartum depression and therapy and helping new moms and all the other amazing things that she offers. So, Rachel, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you. Glad to be here.
Awesome. So if maybe you can help share a little bit about yourself, professional and kind of parent-wide as well, of what kind of got you into this field.
Yeah. Well, I'll start with professionally. I'm a licensed professional counselor, and I've been working in the field for 20 plus years. And initially working more with adolescents and families. But then when I had my own children, who are now 13 and 17.
So oh, wow.
Past postpartum. But that really got me very interested in issues around pregnancy and postpartum health and early, you know, early childhood development, but with focus on parenting, on both moms and dads. Mm-hmm. So I kind of started specializing and realizing there's a huge need for that support of new moms in particular. But I see couples and individuals and work on kind of a range of, you know, postpartum issues up and through, you know, parenting challenges. Mm-hmm. Lots and lots of transitions, you know, that we're all navigating as we become families.
Definitely. I feel like there's just transitions throughout the different, I mean, our daughter's 3 months old and I'm like, we've already gone through so many transitions.
Yeah. And as soon as you think you have one figured out, then they change.
Exactly. Definitely. That's a
challenge. But yeah, so I'm really, I love being a mom, and I've got two teenagers now, one of whom's getting ready to go to college. But so yeah, that's opened up a little more time as they've gotten older. I'm seeing a little more clients, having a little busier in the professional department.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And Rachel, can you tell us, maybe just for those that aren't aware, just what, you know, postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety are? Because I know that, you know, they're often referred to as PPD and PPA, but I feel like sometimes just like how, you know, those diagnoses are formally kind of presented.
Right. Yeah, that postpartum time frame is, you know, a lot going on, and some very normal changes that happen obviously when our bodies go through pregnancy and delivery and all the hormonal changes that go with that. But so, you know, there's a pretty normal postpartum period, and it's normal to have some mood swings, and obviously we all read a lot, so we have some natural anxieties around, you know, becoming parents, taking care of our babies, all the little details about them. But postpartum depression is diagnosed when, you know, there's more notable symptoms of anxiety, irritability, frequent crying, fatigue, maybe mm-hmm. feeling guilt, beyond a couple of weeks postpartum. If it's lasting, you know, 6 weeks plus, that's, you know, interfering maybe in our relationships or in our ability to function as a parent. Mm-hmm. Some people, and you know, have thoughts about self-harm and are just really overwhelmed and have limited support. So, so at that point, you know, we would diagnose up to a year postpartum. We would consider, you know, those symptoms as diagnostic of anxiety, of postpartum depression and postpartum anxiety. And, you know, generally, we look at moms more often, but it's also about 1 in 10 dads have some postpartum depression or anxiety. It's not as frequently diagnosed, but definitely impacts the family.
For sure.
Yeah, like those life transitions. I feel like we've talked about every week in our episodes. Definitely affect the birthing parent, but also the support person that is involved definitely are heavily impacted as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So when, you know, we look at postpartum depression or anxiety, a lot of times, you know, a predictor is previous mental health history, a previous diagnosis of depression or anxiety. So we can kind of prepare a little bit for knowing that it's, you know, not uncommon for mm-hmm. parents and partners to have some pretty difficult time, you know, emotionally. And the other, you know, piece that I really notice is all the expectations around parenthood and how our culture sets us up to expect, you know, butterflies and rainbows and sleeping babies, maybe. And so what I notice, you know, my clients is just that difference in reality versus expectations of how parenthood and especially those first couple months will look. And I think that's a big factor that drives a lot of parents into a pretty negative place or a sad place.
Yeah. And we often talk about with, you know, anxiety of the unknown and how unprepared, you know, I feel most people have said they felt for this life transition of having a child and having roles change and expectations from others and feeling that pressure from family and just looking to Google to find all the information, but then overwhelming amount of information. It's just, I definitely can see how, you know, a lot of these things can manifest with all of these major transitions and this lack of support.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I would say, yeah, on that note, support is like one of the most critical pieces in my opinion, in my observation in clients, and then also in living through this recent pandemic, that the effects of not having adequate support have had on, well, a lot of my clients and birthing parents all over the place, but that having that solid support is so critical in getting through and taking care of ourselves through this, taking care of our relationships and ourselves and our babies through mm-hmm. transition of birth and postpartum period.
Yeah. And, you know, you talked about some of the like individual signs and symptoms of individuals that are struggling with PPD or PPA. Are there any other kind of comorbid diagnoses that come up along with some of those individuals that you work with?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think it's not so much a diagnosis, but that idea of, you know, grieving and normalizing. There is some grief that happens when we, you know, we close the door on not having children, and then we are parents and kind of grieving that past. Even lots of my clients who desperately wanted to have a baby and tried, and it was completely intentional, still there's some room for grieving the changes and some of the loss of freedom and loss of sleep, maybe. So that's one that I see that isn't talked about all that much, since we're so focused, a lot of the information out there is so focused on, rightfully so, moving forward and being excited about the, you know, new life and new roles that we have. So grieving, you know, another one that we don't talk about much, and it's much less common, is postpartum psychosis, which is a little scarier and, you know, needs much more immediate attention. Again, that's, you know, not nearly so common as postpartum depression or postpartum anxiety disorders, but definitely, again, often shows up when there's been a history, a previous history of bipolar disorder or of schizophrenia. So that's one that I don't work so much with clients on that range, but it is definitely real and less talked about, but equally serious.
Yeah, I mean, those are all different experiences. I think, like you said, based off of just upbringing and biologically what mm-hmm. your family members experience, you most likely genetically are more like likely to potentially carry those as well. And What does that look like, I guess, also thinking of working with the families or working with couples with individuals who are struggling with some of these mental health issues?
Yeah. Well, it is, I think, really important to recognize that there's no fault, that no one, you know, brings this on themselves, or that, you know, in general, there's some stigma. We're still working on stigma around mental health issues, but, that new parents are vulnerable. They're sleep deprived. They have had their bodies go through really stressful experiences, and hormonally they're, experiencing a lot of changes. And so removing judgment. So if that means their, you know, support partner and themselves really working on letting go of that self-judgment, or I should be this way, I should feel this way, because I hear that a lot. I'm happy my baby's healthy. I should be happier. I should be grateful, but I'm crying all the time and I can barely function, you know? So kind of stepping back and being able to be like self-compassionate. And then of course, you know, working in the family or with a couple, both partners understanding, you know, physiologically there's a lot of changes going on, and then emotionally huge changes. So recognizing this is a fairly normal occurrence, unfortunately, that birthing parents experience, and that it's not about fault or guilt or blame. And then, you know, trying to move forward, like in this moment, what can we do moving forward? What can we do, even if it's simply like a 5-minute mindfulness exercise to get grounded and get some oxygen into our brain? So that might be just on a very practical level, you know, an intervention or a way to help partners support each other. Of course, if you're talking to someone who hasn't sought therapy yet or hasn't talked with their medical provider, then that's certainly a really important piece, is keeping providers in the loop and getting that support. And I suggest, you know, to a lot of my clients, keeping a little journal, even a calendar with a little smiley face or a frowny face, but something to kind of track so that we can keep, like I can keep track of, you know, how I'm feeling, because as you guys know, it's like a little time warp sometimes when you think about trying to remember how you felt a month ago or 2 months ago. So I recommend kind of jotting feelings down, and that way, when you do see your doula or medical provider or therapist, you kind of have some information to say, well, this has been going on a lot more than 2 weeks, you know, for example. Or I'm feeling worse than I realized when I look back on my journal or something. So, you know, that's another way to kind of be proactive in getting some help with feeling better.
Now, that's a great suggestion, too, with the calendar. I'm sitting here like, oh, man, remember certain parts of the first few weeks of her life or the month. Like, it's definitely a blur in the beginning for sure.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
And I, what you said when you were, you know, talking about a lot of the parents or new moms that you work with, like saying, I should feel this way, or I should, I've read somewhere, it's like, don't should yourself. Like,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, there's a balance between reading all the pregnancy books and new mom books, but not taking in so much information that, you know, eventually they're going to contradict each other. And then we're just left kind of over anxious about all that information. So there's lots of good information out there, but it's also okay not to overload ourselves before or after babies are born.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like we constantly find things that contradict itself.
And I think that's part of what's so difficult, particularly about the anxiety, you know, postpartum anxiety, is we're being questioning our own judgment, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yet in parenthood, I think it's so important to find some trust for ourselves to trust our judgment when you've got conflicting messages or in-laws telling you this is how it should be done or why are you doing that? Like mm-hmm. that inner confidence to trust, like I can trust my intuition with my own baby, you know. But I think that's a challenge for a lot of new parents is sorting through what's real for us and what's other people's opinions that don't really apply to us.
Yeah, when you said that, my eyes rolled so back and so far back in my head that I saw my brain of just the different, this one, experiences that everyone brings in with family members and in their own individual experiences and how it's perceived as, you know, trying to be helpful and wanting to help, you know, new parents and help mm-hmm. them move through this. And their child, their experience is different. And so just that really, really resonated with me because I think everyone has their opinion because they know they have valid experiences and they want to be helpful. And it also causes more anxiety, more stress, and more shoulds. You start shitting on yourself more yep. because of those things. And so I think that's super important to highlight.
Yeah. I think, you know, having, you know, a big piece that's helpful is having a good support system of peers. I mean, obviously older, wiser people are extremely valuable, but having peers who are also kind of concurrently going through parenthood and postpartum is so validating and so important because the moment that, you know, that you're parenting your daughter is different than by kids who are teenagers, you know, all of the challenges in our society and, you know, just trends and medical information. So being, you know, being supported by peers who are having that same kind of schema around them as they're navigating parenthood is really valuable, which, you know, not to keep going back to the pandemic, but, you know, what I would see in a lot of my clients over the last 3 years is just a lot of isolation and fear for their baby's wellness around the pandemic, but fear of what other people are thinking of, whether they should be quarantining or not, or whether they're using daycare, just so many choices, but not being able to really connect with other parents, other same age, you know, peer group parents that, like my generation, I have an awesome play group of families that I am still very close friends with many of, and our kids are like cousins, you know, they were raised together. And so that I think is so important and so challenging, was particularly during the pandemic challenging, but even challenging for parents that are both working outside the home, just trying to juggle finding support, you know, making that a priority if it doesn't happen naturally, you know?
Yeah. And I think just another emphasis for like every episode this last like month and a half, community has been such a big highlight of the importance of community and everyone bringing their wealth of knowledge, whether it be elders or it be family members, or whether it be peers, whether it be, you know, acquaintances or people who that you know who are just having babies as well, or who are wanting to have kids or try. It's so important to have a wealth of knowledge and people in your community who can share all those things so it isn't overwhelming, because you can take some things that you want and you can say no thank you for other things. And so
just hearing that, like, oh, other people's babies aren't sleeping through the night either, or other people's babies are throwing up a lot, or, you know, other people got mad at their pediatrician, or just realizing, like, yeah, that it's taking away the aloneness and the isolation factor. So just knowing, like, okay, these are common experiences and we will figure them out, we will navigate them, and we will all be okay. We will all survive this, because it is powerful watching other parents, maybe who are a few months ahead, maybe in their with their baby. But hearing about that and knowing that other people get pretty much exactly where you're at. You know?
Yeah. And thinking about, you kind of touched on some like different protective factors that help birthing parents and support people through postpartum depression, anxiety, and psychosis. Can you touch on a little bit other things? And when I say protective factors for our listeners, it's things that help you bounce back. It's things that help you get grounded. It helps you recover, helps you stay, I guess, on the path of wellness when you're going through some of these difficult experiences in life and stressors, and it helps kind of rebalance you. And so are there any other kind of, with working with your clients, other protective factors that you've helped them develop or that you've noticed that are lacking?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they all sort of tie together. And I, you know, talked a lot about the support system, because I think that is, you know, we're social species and we were kind of meant, I think, to be in a village. And so cultivating that and making room for that and not expecting ourselves to do it by ourselves, certainly a good, that's a, you know, preventative care, I guess, you know, having that support, whether it's people you met in the birthing group or your neighbors or, you know, out here in North Portland, we have something called the Swap and Play, and it's a communal space where it's in the bottom of an old church, but it is a non-religious co-op, really, where people share equipment and baby clothes, and it's a huge play space, and they have little music groups there, and they're starting to get a little more active now that, that babies and young ones can get vaccinated, and so we're not quite so worried about being gathering together, but that's just a, it's a physical resource that leads to a whole lot of emotional resources for new parents. So I know there were a couple other groups like that in Portland, and I'm not sure what's happened to them, but it was called the Swap and Play. So that's just like a play, a community place, people all in similar stages of parenting. So that's, I think, a really nice preventative care measure is knowing there's going to be hard days and I'm going to need people to cry on or to lean on. So I think that's a really a helpful, you know, resource. Staying in touch with people from your birthing group or friends that are in similar parenting spaces. And then self-care, which, you know, usually often goes out the window when we have. But doing what you can and recognizing it's not selfish to take time out for yoga or coffee with a friend. Like, I think women in particular carry that, like, I must be the nurturer and it's not okay to worry about my needs so much. So I think adjusting that belief, you know, that it is not selfish to take time to drink a cup of tea by myself or shut off the phone for a little while or whatever it is, but taking space to recharge as a nursing parent or the birthing parent. So self-care, self-compassion, but it all, I think it all like sort of fits together with not being so judgmental of ourselves, practicing self-compassion, being gentle, accepting that it's, you know, we're not going to be perfect and that's okay. No one, if that's our belief, then we can let go of that idea of I need to be the perfect parent. You know, there is a lot of pressure. So letting go of some of that, I think, are good preventative measures. And of course, there's tons of really good books and podcasts out there as well.
Awesome. And thinking about as well, you know, protective factors and supports for couples who are going through this transition to parenthood. Is there any other kind of recommendations or supports that you work with your couples on how to navigate and strengthen the relationship or maintain through these transitions?
Yeah, well, as you are probably experiencing, it's hard to find time for adult time, even just having a conversation about expectations or a challenging moment that came up. So a lot of my work is figuring out how do we how do we balance or juggle? Yeah, I'm exhausted and baby needs a lot of time and energy, but we need some adult time to check in and not let things simmer for too long. So checking in and talking about how things are going and what my needs are, each parent, you know, partner needs, but prioritizing, even if it's a brief amount of time, it doesn't have to be an hour, you know, here and there, but having maybe a Sunday night habit of checking in and seeing how we're doing is really important. And I've got people that schedule their therapy sessions because that's the only way they both commit to setting that time aside. And that's okay. If that's what works, I would encourage setting aside time in addition to coming to therapy, but it's kind of a funny joke. So the only way we'll talk to each other is if we make a therapy appointment. So yeah, protecting that time to check in and work through whatever's coming up. Because becoming parents does bring up a lot of our own old issues and our relationship issues. So.
Yes, that's definitely something that I think we reflect on often, is just how our upbringings are different and how we unintentionally and subconsciously bring in some old maybe habits of parented or communicated or handled conflict or those things. And so it's really helpful to be aware of those things and have those conversations. Therapy is great for that as well. But having that insight, then you're able to disrupt it when it happens. And I think it's really great for when we talk, we're aware of not all of it, obviously, but we're aware of a lot of those happen. So when we see it happening, you know, we're able to pause and say, hey, where is this perfectionism coming from? And been able to kind of pause and kind of talk about it to move through it.
Right, right. And I think, you know, I don't recommend everybody needs to have their individual therapist, but it is helpful if both partners have done some work and have some awareness around what are my triggers, what are my fears for this little person, and how does that play out with my partner, and when I'm, you know, as the little person gets older and starts talking and having, you know, you're having different parenting interventions, but being self-aware that we're maybe projecting or carrying some of our own childhood hurts or fears or deficits with us, and kind of keeping, having a place to process all of that, whether it is with a really good mom friend or with a therapist, or coach or whatever. But I guess the point is having places to process all of this stuff that inevitably will get brought up or, you know, comes up when we either sometimes it's reaching a certain age that something impactful happened to us at that age. And then our child gets to that age and we have a reaction we weren't expecting. But, you know, having the place, creating the space to process all of that and recognize it. And sometimes it's after the fact, that's okay. But at least we're still working on it, you know.
Well, Rachel, the way we always end our episodes each week is with a win and a woe. So this can be something that you have going on that was, you know, maybe great in your professional or personal life, as well as maybe something that wasn't so great or an area of growth that kind of came up for you this week. So we're going to go ahead and do that now. But first, to set the tone and give an example, I always have something. And I think I'm going to go with a woe first. I always like to end on a positive note. My woe this week is I really struggled recently with setting boundaries for my daughter around people kissing her. Oh. And I don't know how to do it. And so I found myself being very passive and just watching it happen and not really knowing how to take that step. So I think that is my woe, is just really struggling with those boundaries with family, friends, and how to navigate that. It was very difficult, but I think my win along with that is that I have this new moms group that I am involved in over text with just some friends who've recently all had kids kind of in the same timeline as me. And we ended up talking about it in our text message. And I got a lot of very creative ideas from some friends, which I really appreciated. Some people were like, tell them the doctor says it's not okay.
There you go.
So I think I'll take that as my win and shout out to my girls who have definitely been very supportive of me.
Yeah, I like that one. That's a good suggestion. And I'm glad that you have a mom's group. That's
so- yes. It has been so lovely to have people having kids around the same time. What about you, Rachel? Do you have a win and a woe?
Yeah, well, I mean, my woe is different. It's maybe bigger right now. It's just, I mean, we've been touring colleges and I'm thinking about the other side, the other side of empty nesters when they grow up and they're successful and thinking about moving out. So that's not necessarily a woe. It's just, you know, navigating another big transition that, like, I work with a lot of new moms and talk with a lot of parents who are in the early childhood parenting woes. And, but mine's on the other side. Feeling a little like, huh, he's going to be in college. And that really changes the dynamics of our family. He's going to move out. And not super far away, but, you know, not in the house anymore. But my win is that I have several women's moms weekends and get-togethers planned over the next couple of months because several of us are also sending our oldest to college. So that's the same group that I've been hanging out with for most of my kids' lives, kind of going through all the stages at the same time. So we're going to get away and kind of talk and process a little bit. This new phase of parenting in the college phase.
That support system is so important, that community at all stages of life.
Yeah, yeah. And I can't say enough about how important that is. And what I see in, you know, the clients of mine that struggle the most are like either moved far away from their extended families or don't connect with their extended families, but that they haven't found their chosen family, you know, their community or their village, their parenting village, which is so critical. And if you look back over time, that's how humans have managed.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Well, David, you're up. You got to round us out here with a win and a woe.
All right. Definitely have a win. And I definitely can think of a woe. So I will start with I'll start with a woe first. It's not really a woe. I think it's a personal one that I'm on paternity leave now. So I'm now, thank you, State of Washington, for providing a paternity leave. So a paid paternity leave. So I'm on paternity now. And just transitions are hard for me specifically. And so just transitioning to not working as much or at all, going from working a bunch to not working at all, is a hard transition for me. So I think that's just a woe. I'm excited for it, but just navigating that transition and what that looks like and still trying to create a routine for me and is just, yeah, brings me some anxiety. So that's a woe. And a win this week, the last couple podcasts I've been talking about how I've just been having a hard time feeling useful and feeling like I've been being a supportive parent when it comes to helping console our daughter and putting our daughter to sleep and napping because I've been working. And so when I come home, I'm with her for a significant amount of hours, but that relationship's just different because I'm not the one that's with her all the time. Mm-hmm. We had a really awesome moment earlier this week where, you know, it was time for put her down for a nap and I, you know, rocked her and sang to her and bounced with her and put her to sleep and she fell asleep with me and we napped for a good, you know, 45 minutes to an hour. And that was the first time that she let me put her to sleep. And that was just a really special moment for me and kind of having that things will change, things are temporary. And
yes,
having that just experience was really great.
Awesome. Yeah, that is a good feeling.
So that is a wrap for this episode. And so, Rachel, before we let you go, is there anything that you wanted to kind of last message you want to share to our listeners? Any resources that are on your mind that you think would be helpful for them to look out for, as well as like, your contact information if they wanted to reach out to you individually?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll start. My website is just rachelstark.com, and that's probably the best way to learn a little more about my practice. And then also contact me. I'm booked a couple months out, but I always like to take new parents on. That's kind of my favorite client. So certainly I encourage, you know, anyone who's struggling in their relationship or with parenting or all these transitions to reach out for help, whether it's a, you know, there's a baby blues support group, connecting with their, you know, birthing group or birthing center for resources, but also just individual therapy, having a person that's, you know, maybe that's been there and done it, but having that, reaching out and knowing that it's really, really actually a sign of strength to reach out and get support and get help. Also, I have a few books on my website that might be of interest for new parents. So that would be another resource.
Awesome. Well, I definitely will make sure to add your website to the description for this podcast. And for those listeners, if there's any questions or reactions or insights that you had while listening to this episode, make sure to send us a message at marcusfamily21@gmail.com or one of our Instagram messages, will direct message us, or leave a voice message we can highlight for a future episode. But thank you so much, Rachel, for joining us and having this conversation that I think is really important, that isn't had enough, just to highlight and normalize these experiences and have a place to talk about it.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Thank you for having me. This is, yeah, very important topic.
Absolutely. I hope you have a good rest of your day.
Thank you. You guys as well. All right. Well, thanks again for having me, and we'll be in touch, I hope.
Yes, definitely. Take care.
All right. You too. Bye-bye.